Yeah.
All right, and welcome to the first virtual book club for Augusta Free Press. I'm Crystal Graham. I am joined here by actually two guests. We have, and I'm actually going to bring one more person into the conversation right now. So I'm actually going to be joined by a total of four people. Hi, Zach, how are you? All right, so we are live now. And want to remind our guests who are on here to discuss the book that if you're not talking and you want to mute, you're welcome to do that. Otherwise, we will have a discussion of our first book club, which is The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead. We decided to do this at Augusta Free Press because many of you know that we have, we're in some trying times, and we wanted to try to find some ways to kind of connect people in the community. And so one of the ways that we thought to do that was through a book club. I personally am part of a book club, and I know that one of our guests here, Cliff, is as well. And, you know, we normally meet in person at a restaurant, have a glass of wine. So we invite you to do that if you'd like to join us with that. If you haven't read The Nickel Boys yet, we'll warn you that there will be spoilers. This is a book that has surprises. And so as we get into the discussion, if you want to log off, you can. But if you want to tune in for a few minutes here at the beginning, just to kind of get an idea of what we're doing, you're welcome to join that part of the conversation. And then maybe you can join us next month as we discuss another topic. So I thought first, just quickly, Cliff, we might start with you. If you just want to say who you are and just maybe something you're kind of doing to connect with people during this COVID-19 epidemic.
Sure. I'm Cliff Garstang. I am a fiction writer myself. I've published several books, including one that's coming out next month. And it's funny and not funny, but yeah. I work at home anyway. I work writing my fiction. So for my own personal work, the isolation has not changed how I operate. But I do like to get together with friends at coffee shops and bars and that sort of thing. So this has been a little bit hard. And fortunately, I love Zoom. And Zoom has been a way that my own book club has met. I've also attended readings by authors through Zoom. A couple of organizations that I'm part of have had meetings through Zoom. So that's really been a huge help.
All right. Well, great. Thanks, Cliff. And I agree with you. Zoom has found a way to bring a lot of us together during these times. So, Tish, I'm going to let you just quickly say just a couple words about yourself. I know both for you and Zach, this is kind of your first book club, but it's really just a conversation, so nothing to be nervous about.
Well, hi, I'm Tish. And yes, this is my first book club discussion. So it'll be interesting to hear what people think of the book and their ideas and take on it. So, but I'm still working. So I work out in the public. So I'm still interacting and dealing with people. So.
Well, welcome to the conversation. And I'm glad to have you a part of it and hope that this is a little bit helpful, even though you're still working and out there while some of us are a little more isolated. We're definitely glad to have you as part of the conversation. And Zach, you were a little late coming on board, so I'm going to cross my fingers that your audio is working okay, but definitely introduce yourself to our viewers.
Hi, I'm Zach. This is my first book club, but I'm still working every day, Monday through Friday, so with the public, so that's how I'm staying connected.
Well, great. So I appreciate all of you joining us. And again, I just kind of want to invite people who are weighing in on the Augusta Free Press Facebook page or tuning in on the Augusta Free Press Facebook page, just remind you that if you have read the book, feel free to weigh in throughout the discussion. I'll be monitoring that and can try to add your thoughts to our conversation here as well. So what I thought I would do just to start with is maybe just talk just for a second. I'm going to give you a short synopsis of the book. And so again, we selected The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead. This was a book that really took off last summer and was part of a number of book clubs in the summer and in the fall. And it was recommended to me just recently. So that's the reason that I selected this for the first book club. It's the story of two teenage boys, Elwood and Turner, who are sentenced to a reform school in Florida in the Jim Crow era. And the book, while fiction, is based on the true story of a reform school that operated for 111 years. So I'm going to leave it at that. That's a very brief description. And throughout tonight's discussion, just because some of you that are tuning in, I may give you just a little bit of background about the book as well. Again, most of us, at least who are on the live Zoom feed, have read the book and don't really need the background, but just in case a couple of you are tuning in. But like I said, there will be spoilers because this book did have some surprises. So I'm going to start out with the first question, and then what I'll try to do is pitch this to one of my Zoom participants here. And so if you're someone who really wants to weigh in on that particular subject, then feel free to raise your hand too, but I'll otherwise probably pitch it to you. So the first question that I would have is, what did you maybe think of the start of the book, how it kind of began with the modern day and the information about the national press coverage about the secret graveyard that was found at Nickel Academy? Did that help draw you in by starting with that? And Cliff, I'm going to start with you since you're a seasoned veteran of book club, and then I'll come to Tish and Zach.
It totally did draw me in. And in fact, I expected the book to spend more time in the present. I thought that the book would really be about the secrets that were uncovered by the investigators and the archaeologists who were digging through the dirt. So I was a little bit surprised when we went back and got the story from the beginning. But I know that it's really hard to know where to start a book when you're writing. Do you start in the present where something has already happened and you can clue the reader in that something has happened and then go back to the beginning and work your way up to the climax? Or do you start way back in time and make the reader wait to find out that something has happened? But I think this was a really smart choice on Whitehead's part because it did let us know that there was something coming. And we didn't know what exactly, but we knew something was going to happen. So I thought that was a really good way to start.
Zach, what did you think?
I agree with Cliff. I expected it to deal with more in the present, but it definitely drew me in, and even to the point where I even Googled to see if it was real at first, to see if the school was real, and finding out it was real, just under a different name. So yeah, it definitely drew me in.
Tish, did you want to add anything to that?
I felt the same way. It drew me in. Kind of wanted to know a little bit more right away about that cemetery and stuff, but yeah, it was a good start.
Right, and I guess, Cliff, it never really did get in really in depth to the present. You know, the book as a whole just kind of touched on the present, but most of the book actually went back to the past there. So that was definitely a decision that was made by the author. I do think that there were some style choices there that I really admired. And of course, as all of us who have read the book all the way through know that you get thrown for a loop there at the end of the book as well. So according to the introduction of the book, there was a website, and this again was in the present when he was reading about it. There was a website where people could go and they could post their stories and a picture of them and what happened to them. But the website only had accounts of what had happened to white people at the academy. There weren't any accounts of what had happened to black people. So what do you think is the reason why maybe some of the black boys chose not to tell their stories? And could that have helped with healing? Or do you think that the black now men perhaps feared some kind of repercussion even in the modern times if they went back to talk about what happened at the Nickel Academy? And that's a big question, but I'm going to start with you, Zach.
I definitely, I kind of took that away that Not that he was ashamed of what had happened to him, but that he was like being protective of what happened to him. And I think that had a lot to do with it, that he was, because it, the book always kind of pointed that he didn't know what would happen if he got back to Florida or if he made his real identity known. So I think it had a lot to do with repercussions.
So you think that in the particular case of, we're giving a spoiler here, but in the particular case where it wasn't Elwood, it was actually his friend from the school, that he didn't want to go back to that because he still thought he could face repercussions.
And exactly.
It was under a different name there as well. We're going to talk a lot more about that particular angle as well. Tish, what did you think? Are you still with us, Tish?
Yeah, sorry. I think for most of the boys, it would have been of shame that they didn't want to say how severe they were abused and beaten. But I agree with the Elwood. It was to keep his identity discreet and not reveal anything of him getting caught.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so that's one of the spoilers of the book, is that his friend Turner actually assumes the name of Elwood after Elwood passes away. And we're going to talk a lot more about that as we get further along in this. Cliff, what do you think? Do you think that it was a shame? Do you think that they thought maybe that they were just better off not talking about what had happened to them, that the people who actually did get a chance to graduate or age out of the school just wanted to put that behind them? What were your thoughts?
I think that's probably part of it, but I also thought that there was something deliberate on the part of the state and the school administrators to focus on the white kids and not even admit that they had abused the black kids more. Because it did seem to me, I mean, obviously during that era, the black kids were treated even worse than the white boys. So I thought that was part of why only the white kids were focused on that website.
So maybe that the white kids, their memories weren't as negative, even though they were probably put through some of the same things related to child labor and not as pristine as an education as maybe our character Elwood had hoped for when he first went there. Yeah. So I tend to agree with you on that, Cliff, just that I don't know that as a man and as someone who had grown out of that, I would have felt that it would have been beneficial to write about what had happened to me there. You know, I think, you know, Elwood in particular, as a black boy there, you know, who was very abused, and even his, you know, even his friend who tried to help him, had tried to help him and other characters in the book that we'll talk about in just a minute as well, probably didn't want to talk about that part of his life either. So when we first were introduced to Elwood, we'll go back to when he was younger. When we were introduced to him as a young teenager, he was on his way to take college classes. What did you kind of think of him when he was first introduced? What were your first impressions of him as you were getting to know him before this crime took place that ultimately brought him to the Nickel Academy? And Tish, we'll start with you on this one.
You can pass on me, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right. That's all right. Cliff, we'll go to you next.
Well, you know, Elwood is portrayed as a very likable character. We're meant to admire his work ethic. He's very polite. He's been raised by his grandmother. There have been some issues with his own parents, but his grandmother has raised him fairly strictly. So he's a good boy and works really hard, very smart. And so we're meant to sympathize with him so that when we do, so when he gets in trouble, which is totally not his fault, we're horrified for him. But it's also just the way the book is set up, and we know that it's about this reform school, you sort of know that something bad's going to happen to Elwood, right? You know, it has to be. So even though he's a good guy, you just wait for that shoe to drop.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I felt like you were waiting for that moment. Like, what's going to put him in this reform school? The title of the book obviously pointed you in that direction, that he was going to end up there. You didn't know if it was going to be, you know, it talked about how he was breaking up fights, you know, because, or getting into fights because the kids who were stealing candy from the store that he worked at, you know, he confronted them and they ended up getting into a fight with him, or he was attending protests because of that. Again, that we were dealing with segregation and a lot of protests, and, you know, his grandmother might've been a little more conservative than he was, but he was trying to be a voice in that movement. He was, as we said, a big fan of Martin Luther King, you know, and so he was definitely during that era. So I guess we kind of knew that something would be steering him to the Nickel Academy. What did you think of him when you first were introduced to him, Zach?
I agree with Cliff on everything he said. I was rooting for him the whole time. Like, I knew something was going to happen. Like, I mean, that's the point of the book. But I was surprised why he ended up at the reform school. Because, like you, I thought it would be something like, you know, protesting at a civil rights event or a counter sit-in or something like that. It just kind of took me off guard why he ended up there. So,
you know, there were a lot of modern parallels, and we can talk about them a little bit more, but for all of us, you know, there are headlines across the country about police brutality now, about, you know, migrants being placed in cages at the border, the Mexico border. There were a lot of parallels kind of to what's happening today. And so I think that we kind of all knew as readers, and I'll ask your opinion on this, but when you were in the scene where here Elwood was going to his first college classes and lights flash behind him and here approach, you know, white police officers and two black men in a car, did you kind of have the feeling right away that that was what was the end for Elwood? And I don't remember who I started with, but I'll start with you, Cliff, and then we'll get your opinions at.
Well, yeah, I guess I figured that was a pretty good place to put him in hot water. It was kind of funny that the driver had stolen that car, and that was the reason why they were being stopped. But yeah, that seemed like a pretty good place. I had expected it from the very beginning that something was going to happen. And when he got in that car, I was like, Elwood, don't get in that car. So,
what do you think, Zach?
I totally agree with that statement. Like when he got in the car, I was like, well, I know this is probably how it's going to end. Like, I know this is where the book's going to change, though.
Yeah, so when he was sentenced to the Nickel Academy after this incident, after the arrest, you know, I think that he still kind of went in there a lot like me. I kind of have this Pollyanna view of the world. And I think that he had still kind of hoped that he could go there and get a good education, even if it wasn't college classes, maybe there were some advanced books or something like that. He learned pretty quickly that there wasn't going to be an opportunity like that, that he'd likely end up working in some of these fields. You know, there was a lot of child labor happening there. You know, there was a printing factory and a brick making factory and some other things going on the property. And it seemed like when he first got there, he kind of got the rules. He kind of said, okay, I'll graduate sooner and be able to return to the life I know if I can just navigate these like categories that you needed to get through to get out. So I'm gonna, and I'll start with you this time, Zach, but that's just a little bit of setup. But so Elwood met his good friend Turner on his second day at the Nickel Academy. Did you find when you were reading the book that you kind of overlooked Turner's character, kind of because he was more of a secondary character? And then, and especially because, as we've talked about, we find out in the end that he's pretty central to the book as a whole. But when you were first reading through it the first time, did you kind of dismiss him just as a secondary character and not pay as much attention to him?
I definitely did. Like, I don't think I picked up really on Turner's character until halfway through the book, to be honest. And then when the spoiler happens where he becomes Elwood, I was like, wow, he really was more important than it led on in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have, I've seen some other people who have read the book have told me that they had a hunch that that was the case all along. And I certainly did not have that hunch. And so I found myself going back and like rereading parts of the book just to kind of like parts that I might have read really fast to try to get to know Turner a little bit better. What did you think, Cliff? Did you kind of feel like you overlooked him on like first read through?
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't know anything about the big thing until like the last line of the book. But I realized that Turner was important when they started doing the community service work, the so-called community service work, when the two of them go off with this hipper, younger guy who works for the school, mm-hmm. and they are delivering contraband stolen from the, or repurposed from mm-hmm. the stores at the school. And Turner's such a big part of that, and it seemed like such a big deal for Elwood that at that point it seemed like he was going to be important, because they started talking about what would happen if they ran and other ways that they could cope with what was happening to them. So I don't remember, that's like halfway through the book, I guess.
So I just want to remind you that if you're tuning in and you're not part of our Zoom discussion, you're still welcome to weigh in with your comments on these questions, and I'll introduce them as well, your thoughts and that kind of thing. So feel free to weigh in on the comments on Facebook Live if you'd like to join our discussion here. So again, we're discussing the Nickel Boys. And so shortly after arriving at the Nickel Academy, as you all know, Elwood witnessed bullying, and he tried being him to break up that fight. It was witnessed by someone, and later that night, Elwood was aroused from sleep, so to speak. He was taken to an old work shed that was called the White House. The boys weren't asked questions about what happened. He wasn't able to say he was the hero trying to break up the fight, and they were all punished in this haphazard way with no, it didn't seem like there was any like rules as to what happened, how many lashes each of them got. They were introduced to a machine that was called the Black Beauty, which was basically, it sounds to me like a much more sophisticated version of a belt, you know, I don't know, but something that essentially whipped these boys to try to get them to fall in line. And our main character, Elwood, ends up in the infirmary for what appeared to be a good little bit of time with these wounds to his legs and body and that kind of thing. If you remember in the book, while he was in the infirmary, though, he picked up a little pamphlet that kind of talked about the Nickel Academy and its contributions to the community and how important the school was as far as playing a role. But what, you know, what the Nickel students were doing, building buildings with the bricks and that kind of thing. And you talked a little bit earlier, Cliff, about the community service aspect. They were going out there and painting gazebos for, you know, people in the community and that kind of thing. So here was this really bad thing happening at the Nickel Academy, and yet these students were out there doing this so-called community service, kind of making the people in the community happy, regardless of whether they knew what was actually happening there. So I guess I have a couple of questions in reference to that. And I'll start with the first one with you, Zach. Do you really think that the community knew about the nightmares that were kind of happening on the grounds and that they just chose to ignore that because these kids were basically coming out and doing work or they were getting these kickbacks from the school?
I think they did to a certain degree. I mean, he referenced it a couple times. He kept saying the good old boys, in like a good old boy society. I mean, they had to have, I'm sure that the men who were closely associated with like Spencer and the director's name, but I feel like they had to have known necessarily what was going on. I think they just chose to overlook it because it was a race issue and it didn't necessarily affect them.
So Cliff, I'm going to throw a little bit of a bigger question to you, but similar. What do you think about like any historical or modern day parallels to kind of what was happening there? Do you think this kind of thing still happens, like where bad things are happening places, or people, or in this case, like these work groups are getting kind of reassigned, and, you know, out there in the community doing these kinds of things. Do you think this happens today?
I think there are two different things going on there. One is the corruption that is involved with the community service, since the school, the people in the community, the restaurants and so on, are buying these goods that are being siphoned off, that are supposed to be going mostly to the Black kids in the school. And I wish I could say that corruption never happens like that, but I'm sure it does. But the other thing is the way that the kids were treated, both the white kids and the Black kids, but I still think mostly the Black kids. I suspect that like Zach said, the community, many people in the community knew that was going on. And they benefited so much from the school that they were unwilling or unable to say anything about it without jeopardizing their own benefits.
Well, and I wonder too, you know, you're talking about how the Black kids were treated worse than the white kids. It did say in the book, I think, that the White House, as it was called, that work shed where these lashings took place, that had been segregated, that white kids went there too. We never heard of any of that, you know, in the book itself, although it did say that. But when they referred to that out back, that area where they, you know, basically took people and they strung them up by their arms and whipped them till they basically died, the place where you did not come back from, where the secret graveyard actually came from, it said that was for Black kids only, that the you know, that no white boys were ever there. We don't actually know that for sure, but that's what Turner in the narrative of the book says. When I think of modern day parallels, I think of, you know, some things that have happened in our community. You know, I remember, I think it was the regional jail director here got into a little bit of hot water and some trouble over having work crews doing work at places that weren't authorized, you know, whether they were local businesses or, you know, and I've known that like the jail work crews and things like that to assign to certain places to do good work, that sometimes they've ended up at people's homes or something like that, doing work for those people as well. And so I definitely think that there are some modern day comparisons to that kind of stuff happening. Usually right now it comes out, but I guess eventually this story came out too, not as soon as Elwood would have hoped by his actions. So I mentioned that second thing, that what it meant to be taken out back. And we were kind of introduced to that through a character named Griff, who was a boxer. And he was a Black boy. And typically what happened, according to the book, is that one Black boy and one white boy boxed. And typically always the Black boys won in this case. It doesn't really say why that's the case, but I think it said, you know, like that there had been one white boy who had won the boxing match in some period of time. So the idea behind that was just that happened every year. People went to it, they ate popcorn, that kind of thing. And it was just a diversion, a different activity. But in this case, the superintendent of the school basically is telling this Griff character, again, who is the Black boxer, that he needs to throw it, and he needs to let the other guy win. And so Turner, who's again our central character, Turner and Elwood, Turner overhears this. He happens to be in the room, he overhears this. And so he has a discussion with Griff and tells Griff basically, you know, what outback means, like that if he defied what the superintendent wanted, what that meant, that he would be taken to a place where he'd be shackled and he wouldn't come back from it. That again, that people just didn't return from there. And, you know, Elwood's later told that, you know, in situations like that, he's like, well, why wouldn't grandparents or parents raise a fuss if their kid suddenly disappears? And, you know, Turner tells him, well, most of the time they're just told that the kid ran away, you know, or they don't know what happened to him, or they make up some excuse for something that happened there that's more legitimate. So, and I'll start with you this time, Zach. Do you think that Griff's decision to not throw the fight was intentional, or do you think that, you know, the book kind of suggested that maybe he just kind of forgot that, you know, that he wasn't that intelligent? What do you think?
I don't think it was intentional, to be honest. I really think he got caught up in the moment. I mean, we've all been guilty of being told not to do something, and then we get caught up in it in doing it, and then we do it anyway. And I think that had a lot to do with it, and maybe some of it had to do with pride. He didn't want to lose because, you know, that would mean something to the African-American kids if he won, and if he lost, then it would be like, in my view, it'd be just like another, I don't know, put down from the white people, I guess, to a certain degree, if he lost. So I feel like some of it was pride, and then I think some of it was just that he got caught up in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it said that Griff, in a lot of ways, was the bully. You know, yeah. He was one of the bullies of the school. And so maybe he didn't want to be seen as losing in that situation. What do you think, Cliff?
Well, I thought it was pretty clear that he was intellectually challenged. He wasn't a bright kid. And he says at the end, when he wins that fight, that he thought it was round two. Mm-hmm. And I really think that he got confused. So I agree with Zach that it wasn't intentional that he won. He got caught up in it. He thought it was still round two, and he might have still, if there had been another round, he still might have gone down. But, he just got confused.
So that was a hard part of the book because, of course, it was the first part where we saw a kid who disobeyed an order. And instead of just being taken to the White House and being, you know, whipped by this machine, he didn't come back, you know. And so we realized that the repercussions for these kids for not falling in line was actually much, much bigger than landing in an infirmary for, you know, a week or two or something like that. I think at one time, Turner said something like, you know, you had a few options there, and they were really that you aged out of the program, you know, that you ran away. Sometimes a lawyer might get involved or something like that, but there weren't a lot of ways out. You know, they presented it as this tiered program that you eventually graduated from, but it didn't seem like that was really the reality. You were going to work there until you were going to be there in child labor, not really learning anything until you aged out of the program. So, the next part of the book was when they, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the fact that they took Griff out back was really important for the book, because that way, I mean, it becomes important later. It's really the motivation for what happens at the end is to avoid going out back. So I thought it was really smart of Whitehead to give us that glimpse of what really happens, why they take kids out back, and what happens to them.
It was really integral, I think, to what happened, because we wouldn't have understood the decisions that Elwood and Turner made later in the book if we hadn't had this to start with. So that's a really good point, Cliff. And I agree with that. I mean, Turner talked about it a little bit, you know, both to Elwood and to Griff, you know, when he was trying to kind of warn Griff not to take that action. I think it's interesting too that Turner as a character kind of seemed like he really got the way the school worked. You know, he tried to warn Griff not to disobey the superintendent, and later does the same thing for Elwood. And so in the next phase of the book, it's kind of when the state inspectors are going to come through, and they're sprucing up the school in advance of that to make it look better. And Elwood reveals that he's been keeping a journal, and he's been writing down the things that they've been doing in the community as part of this community service, but also just writing down about, you know, the misfortunes that are happening at the Nickel Academy. And he wanted to brazenly kind of pass it to a state inspector, and Turner again tries to intervene and say, this isn't a good idea, you know, and but eventually Turner says he'll do it for him and delivers the mail, as he says, and gets it to one of the inspectors anonymously. So what do you guys think? Because one of the things we talked about was how Martin Luther King was kind of, Elwood referred to quotes from him and the album that he used to listen to, you know, from Martin Luther King and his speeches throughout the nation. And he kind of weaved that throughout this whole book, that was an important piece of Elwood's character. So do you think that had something to do with the fact that he followed him and maybe had a better I don't know, a picture of the world, that it could be peaceful and that they could solve things, and that he thought that by turning over this journal, that things would get better for the school, or that the school would be shut down. Do you think that that whole, that that Martin Luther King, that inspiration was part of what wanted him to pass on the journal? And I'll start with you, Cliff, because I think I started with you last time, Zach.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. He admired King so much and wanted to be like him. He's constantly quoting from those speeches, at least in his head. And it was really interesting. There was one point in the book where he recounts to himself, I think, what it would take to get out of Nickel, you know, graduating or getting early release or aging out. And then he says, and there's one more way. But he doesn't say what that one more way is. And I'm thinking, what, burn it down? Or exactly are we talking about here? And so obviously this was his plan, was to make this sort of statement the way King would have done. And I also wanted to mention something that occurred to me while I was reading about the inspection, because I just read another novel called A Paragon by Colin McCann. It spends a lot of time, it's based in Israel, and it's really about the occupation of the West Bank, but it spends a lot of time going over what happened in the Czech Republic, or then whatever the territory was, but it's where the Theresienstadt concentration camp was. And I happened to visit there a year ago when I was in the Czech Republic. It's called Terezín in Czech. And this was a supposed to be sort of a model concentration camp, but it was still horrible, not maybe as bad as some of the others. But there was a point at which they were going to have an international inspection from some the Red Cross, or somebody was going to come to see how the residents, they called them, were being treated. And so they spruced up the place, they made it look nice, they fed the people better, they gave them recreational activities. It was very similar to what was going on at Nickel when that inspection was coming. And then, of course, as soon as the inspectors were gone, they took down the facade of treating the people better. And
right, business as usual at that point. Yeah, what did you think, Zach? Did you feel like that you know, because he had followed Martin Luther King for so long, that he had this view that if he turned over the journal, that things would, you know, that things would get better there?
I think that's, in his mind, that was the only way that he could do it, because he referenced that he couldn't tell his grandmother, and he couldn't tell anyone else. He just thought that was the only way. And I feel like Dr. King, his views definitely influenced how he went about doing it.
So, and then we're going to get into some real, I think, good questions just after we kind of wrap up what happened here. You know, Turner, just as he had warned Elwood what would happen, it did happen. He was taken to the White House. He thought maybe it would be the same as the last case, that he would just undergo the lashes and maybe be sent back to the school, but that's not what happened. He was kind of put into like this little solitary room with a bucket for a toilet for about 3 weeks. And then after some point, you know, Turner comes to him and says, you know, look, tomorrow they're talking about taking you out back. And that other option is to run, you know? And so he suggests to them that they make a run for it. And that's what they decide to do, because at this point they've got two options, right? I mean, he knows if he's taken out back that he'll be left in that secret graveyard and that his family will never know what happened to him. Or, you know, his other option is to try to get out of there. And there had been apparently at least one successful student who had run away from there. So they at least thought that they might have a chance. So the two boys run away, you know, to the town that they were familiar with because of that community service. I think that kind of helped them know the lay of the land better than most of the students at the Nickel Academy would have known. They run away, and as dawn approaches, as lights come, they happen to see They're sticking to the road so that they can get out, and they see a nickel van pull up. And it appears, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, it appears that maybe they were actually boys who got out of there with shotguns, because they were talking about, you know, I held it the way my daddy taught me, unless it was, you know, former students who were instructors there. I don't think that I grasped that just right. But essentially the boys were on a bike at that time that they had picked up on their way, and they threw that aside and they ran through a field. And shockingly, because again, if you had kind of read the beginning of the book, you thought that Elwood had made it out of there, but Elwood is the one who is shot down and killed, and Turner is the one who actually escapes. And so just setting this up just a little bit further, a couple weeks later, Turner, you know, after he's escaped, he's getting away, and someone asks him his name, and he gives the name Elwood, his friend, Elwood Curtis. And he said that he used that name because it was a way to honor his friend and perhaps to live for him. So a lot in that part of the book, and, you know, again, that's the big spoiler of the book, that this character that we were introduced to in the very beginning is not Elwood, it's actually Turner, who just took on his name. So obviously, Elwood thought the outcome would be different. When he exposed, he thought by turning over his journal that maybe the school would have been shut down, or things would change that would make things a little bit easier for them. How disappointed would he have been in the outcome, that even though he ultimately paid the price by giving up his life, and nothing changed at the school as a result? And I'll start with you, Zach.
I don't really know. I'll pass on this one.
That's okay. That's fine. What do you think, Cliff? Maybe I wasn't clear in my, you know, in how I presented it either, but
I think there's a lot to talk about there. I think that ultimately the truth comes out with the excavation that's going on mm-hmm. there, and with people like Elwood / Turner coming back and finally telling their stories, the truth is finally emerging, and things are going to get better. So, you know, it's now how many years later? A lot of years later.
But, yeah, a lot of years after he passed away before it actually comes to light.
But, you know, you don't always see the fruits of your heroic actions. And so if he can look back from wherever he is now, I think he'd be pleased with the result. One thing about what happened, you know, so the structure of the book is interesting. Tish mentioned earlier that it jumped around a little bit in time, which it did. We had flash forwards several times to different periods in Turner's life, of when he's working just as a laborer in New York, and then when he's starting his business, and then when he's more successful. But there was an interesting incident where he's like walking down the street in New York City, and this guy recognizes him mm-hmm. and from Nickel. And that was a red herring, because it made us think that character recognized Elwood. And Elwood, or Turner, asks the guy, whatever happened to that guy Elwood hung around with, or I hung around with?
Right.
And the guy's like, what was that guy's name? That was, you know, kind of to throw us off the track, really. A pretty smart move.
Yeah, I went back and reread that after that. After, you know, we knew how the book ended, I went back and it made a lot more sense that he didn't want to give his business card because it had a false name on it, that he immediately threw away the napkin. He didn't try to give the guy, you know, any help regarding that. And right. Obviously because he had assumed this other identity.
But anyway, ultimately the outcome is the right outcome. It just took way too darn long.
Yes.
What did you guys feel like, you know, Turner eventually, you know, he said at the beginning that there had been reunions of the Nickel Academy and he had never felt like he should go to any of those. And, you know, he had never felt like he needed to give his his account of things for that website, you know, that featured just the white boys and that kind of thing. But in the end, he did decide that he should go to this press conference where they had uncovered this secret graveyard. And he felt like maybe he could give a voice to Elwood and to the, you know, the kids who had died there by attending this news conference and being, you know, being present and being able to be interviewed and that kind of thing. In the end, do you think that that was the right way to honor his friend? Again, when he took his name, he kind of said that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to honor his friend. He wanted to live for him. Do you feel like he accomplished that by speaking up at that point? Zach, I'm going to offer you the opportunity, but if you want to pass, it's fine.
I think that was the best way he could honor him, by telling his story. And I guess coming clean as to who he was, but I think that was probably the best way he could have done it. Also, I think that he mentioned at the end, he was talking about how he was going to tell the African-American side of the story. And I think that added, if he told the story of going out back, necessarily the white population at Nickel would not have known about that. And that would have added to the secret graveyard that they found. I think him sharing that aspect of it probably would have honored Elwood in the best way, because then it would have explained why there was a secret, you know, graveyard there.
Yeah, and I'm going to pitch it to you now, Cliff, but I do just want to say too, a lot of the language that you hear us all using is because it's exactly how it was used in the book. So, you know, when I talk about black boys or white boys and that kind of thing, that's exactly how the author portrayed it in the book. So I just wanted to say that, because, you know, I'm not always saying African-American or something that I might in another setting, but I'm being true to kind of how the author portrayed things in the book, if that makes sense. So I'm going to pitch it to you, Cliff. What were your thoughts?
That's a really good point. Crystal, maybe we should have said that earlier. I also thought that Turner needs to come clean. I mean, I agree with Zach that he's at this point honoring Elwood in a different way than he did before, and in a way also honoring all the other kids at the school who suffered the same fate. But he's also been under this burden of false identity for all of this time, and it's time to reclaim himself. And he does that in a couple of ways. One, he finally tells Millie, his wife or girlfriend, the whole story, and she's naturally upset that he has lied to her all this time, but ultimately understands. And then it's really symbolic that he uses his Elwood driver's license for the last time as he's boarding the flight to go down to Florida. And we hear him realize that he'll have to get a new identity. He'll have to re-become himself. So partly symbolic, but also partly a great resolution to his own conflict.
So what do you guys think about just Turner as an adult, as a man, as someone, you know, he's obviously very accomplished. He went to New York City. He started very modestly by buying one van. He started a moving company and went on to have a whole bunch of moving vans. That came out kind of during the interaction that he had with the other guy from the school that he ran into in the city. And he said, you know, he lied about how many trucks he actually had and that kind of thing to not look as successful as he had ultimately become. One of the things that I kind of thought about when I was reading that was, did somehow when he stepped into Elwood's shoes, when he took his name after Elwood died, do you think that that somehow helped him become the businessman that he ultimately became? Because here Elwood was the one at the school who was supposedly the smart one, the educated one, and the one that would have gone on to do big things in the world. Turner was actually in some ways smarter because he knew how to work the school. You know, he knew, he tried to warn Griffin and Elwood not to do some of the things that they did. But so maybe smarter when it comes to street smarts, whereas Elwood was a little bit more book smart. I don't know. That's just one thing that popped in my head, is if he had kept the name Turner, would he have gone on to run a successful moving business? What do you guys think?
I think that's a really good point. I think it's true that he sort of really does become Elwood and works hard the way Elwood would have. And it's also another red herring that the author gives us, because he's behaving like we think Elwood would have behaved. And so we continue to believe this is Elwood.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a trick, but it works both ways.
I mean, I think we discussed this really early on, but were you guys fooled? I mean, like I was, because I, until I read it, I had no idea that Elwood was Turner, you know, until I read it in the book, I had no idea. And like I said, there are other people who have said that they had that hunch early on.
No idea.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Okay. So I wasn't the only one completely fooled by it. I mean, I love an author who does that, who surprises you at the end like that. I just read, I think it's The Silent Patient. And I think that was one that you had recommended maybe to me, Cliff, or someone on a thread that we had. And it was the same kind of surprise ending at the end. And I just love books like that. So when Elwood didn't tell his grandmother, you know, when he finally did see her after what happened to him very early in the book, the first time he went to the White House and he chose not to tell her what had happened, I feel like that could have had a really big impact on his outcome. Like, do you think that if he had told her what happened, that maybe there was something that she could have done to change what ultimately happened to him? Or do you think that it wouldn't have made any difference at all? Like, I have to think that as a grandmother, she would have reacted and raised a fuss and maybe tried to find another lawyer, even when the other lawyer kind of went away, trying to do something because she knew that her Elwood, you know, had big plans for the future. Or do you think that it wouldn't have mattered, you know, that either way, the outcome would have been the same? And I'll start with you, Zach.
I feel like that, in my view, I really feel like he didn't tell her because it would have caused more problems for him. Because I feel like that the school, if she would have raised a fuss, then he would have ended up in the White House or out back earlier along in the story. And I feel like he was smart enough to know that if he told his grandmother and she made a fuss, that ultimately he would end up at the same fate. And I think he was trying to save his own skin to a certain degree there.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. What do you think, Cliff?
No, I agree with that. And he had already figured out that the only way to get out, until he comes to a different conclusion later, but at that point he thinks that he just has to get along and follow the rules and keep quiet in order to get out.
Exactly.
Okay, so this book obviously tackled some kind of big issues. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, it's got parallels to kind of the modern day, just the issues that come up with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, obviously the issues that we see with migrants and detention centers. There's so many things that kind of pop in my head when I read this book. You know, we hear about police brutality almost every day. And maybe now with everything that's happening with coronavirus, that stuff is getting buried a little bit more than it normally would. But did in any way this book make you kind of like want to take action in some way? You know, I love it when a book, after you read it, even a fictional book, makes you want to do something. You know, did it make you kind of want to demand justice or take action in any way after reading this, even though it's a fictional account, knowing that, you know, that these things did happen at the school that this was based on? That's a big question, but just curious.
Yeah. Anytime I read fiction that is, I would call agenda driven, but I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, he's obviously got issues that he's concerned with. His other work does similar issues. Mm-hmm. And anytime I read fiction or nonfiction that deals with these issues, I always get outraged and wish I could do something about it. And there's just, it's hard to know what we can do. And it, you know, it's hard for him to know what he can do. Colson Whitehead, I mean, that's why he writes these novels, is because he can't stop the system by himself, but he can spread the word and raise awareness.
Yeah, and I think that's what this book was meant to do, like just bring up conversations here among people like we are. I think you're right. The author had written another book, The Underground Railroad, that won a Pulitzer right before this. This was kind of the follow-up book to that, which is, I think, why this book got so much acclaim when it first came out. When this book was released, just about everybody who does a book club included this, you know, in the book club that they did.
We did not include it in my book club because we had done his earlier book in my
had you? Book. Yes. Yes. And we haven't included this in my book club either. And, you know, we try to mix the book club that I do, we try to mix in business books as well. So there's just a limited number of books that we can actually introduce in a given year. I always say I need to be a part of like 3 book clubs, but then time is always, you know, part of the issue. So we're getting up close on the hour, and I'm just going to ask just a couple of questions as we kind of wrap this up. Cliff, you did mention you had read his other book. Was that The Underground Railroad?
Yes.
And so what did you think of that book?
Well, it was fabulous. But so I was expecting this to be a little different because that includes what I would describe as a magical realism element. So it has the Underground Railroad, which we're familiar with, except that he makes it an actual railroad, a train on tracks, instead of the metaphorical Underground Railroad that happened in history. So it's quite a complicated book, and it involves lots of characters, and it's way more complex than this. So I was actually disappointed in this at first because of how straightforward it was. It was only the ending that made me really love it.
What did you think as a whole, Zach? Is this the kind of book, like, when you got to the end, did you want to like reread it again? Because I kind of did. I actually went back and kind of really fast skimmed through it again because I felt like there were things that I missed the first time once I knew the conclusion.
Yes, I told Brandon that I really needed to probably reread it because I read it pretty fast because I waited until the last minute. But I feel like I missed some things that now if I reread it, I would pay a lot more attention to. So I enjoyed it, though.
So just as a way of wrapping up, I just want to get both of your opinions on what would have happened to Elwood if he had never gotten into that car, if he had walked his way to college, walked his way to his first college class. Do we think that he ultimately would have ended up at the Nickel School anyway, just because obviously, you know, blacks during this time had a really challenging time. And even in this case, he did nothing wrong except make the mistake of getting into the car with someone, you know, who he had no idea had done something criminal. And so I'm going to start with you, Zach, and then I'll let you finish on that one, Cliff.
I was rooting for him. So I would hope that he would not have ended up at Nickel regardless. I really thought at the end he was going to be, you know, alive and he was going to be successful. So I would hope that if he hadn't gotten in that car, that he would have gone on to college and he would have done something with the civil rights movement and, you know, not ended up the way he did.
Cliff?
I agree that he would have gotten involved in the civil rights movement and probably not have ended up at Nickel, but he might have ended up dead anyway, just because he was willing to really put it all out there. And so he could have gotten into trouble anyway.
I think that with the protests and everything, he may have ended up, you know, as he got older in jail or, as you said, dead as a result of the time and era of what we were dealing with. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. Zach and Cliff, stay on for just a second. As we wrap this up, I just want to have a couple closing words with you. For those of you who tuned in to our Facebook Live, I'm sorry, there were a lot of spoilers. But for those of you who read the book, you know, I hope that, you know, the conversation was good and that you had had an opportunity to kind of rethink some things too. And in some cases, like I said, there's probably some parts, that I know I want to go back and reread as well. In coming months, my goal for this is to try to find other moderators. So not that I would always be the one that would lead the discussion, but perhaps that we can find other people in the community to lead the discussion. And we'll still run it through the Facebook Live on Augusta Free Press, just because we have a built-in audience there. So if you know someone who might be interested in leading one of those discussions, or if you have any suggestions for our next book, please drop me a line. You can just email me at freepress@intellos.net, and I'll be putting out a story that kind of has this in there as well that will include that contact information. So I picked this book kind of out of the air. And as I said, things were happening fast with COVID-19. And my husband suggested that since I did a book club anyway, a virtual book club might be a good way to bring people together. And I had a stack of books that I had recently ordered upon the recommendations of friends. And so I kind of picked the one off the top that I hadn't read yet. And that wasn't too thick, because again, we have so much on our shoulders right now. I wasn't sure if I could deal with a 600 page book during this time either. So I kind of had no idea what we were getting into with this title. I did know a little bit about the author and the fact that, you know, he was big into civil rights and writing about segregation and things of that nature. So I had an idea, but I don't think I quite knew exactly what was going to happen here. And if you go back and look at my introduction video on this, you'll see that I was pretty clueless. I knew it had to do with a school in Florida and some injustices that happened there, but certainly was very surprised by this book. I enjoyed it. I think, as I said at the very beginning, it took me a little bit more to kind of get into this book than it does with some. But once you got invested in the characters and in Elwood, I definitely jumped in. So I appreciate Tish joining us early on. She actually sent me a note and said she had to drop off. She was, I think, walking in the evening and ran into some people. And so she didn't want to be disruptive to our conversation. So go Tish for staying active during this as well. I try to take about a 2-mile walk every day just to clear my head, because at this point we're inside so much. And I really appreciate you, Zach, joining me. I got to know Zach when we were both doing work in suicide prevention throughout the state of Virginia. And he's carrying that torch on in North Carolina now, right? Got a wedding coming up very soon. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Cliff, being a local author, I appreciate your perspective as well. I mean, I always think it's interesting because you've written these books and you know kind of the turmoil that you're going through when you're writing them, to find out if you're, you know, presenting it in the best way possible, your story. So I appreciate
turmoil is an excellent word.
Well, I do live with a writer as well, so I've seen the agony firsthand. So I hope that next time we can get a couple more people to join us on the Zoom just to add some more perspective. But I think that tonight's conversation was very well. And if you didn't join us or you missed part of this, it will be archived both on Facebook as well as on the Augusta Free Press website. So again, I want to thank my contributors tonight who discussed the book with us, and thank you for joining in as well. For Augusta Free Press, I'm Crystal Graham signing off.